WMKV 89.3 FM, with permission of WMUB-FM, Miami University Broadcasting, is proud to present the following hour-long historic documentary on one of the greatest legends of jazz, Vic Spiderbeck.
This is VIX, a biographical series made possible through a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and produced by Miami University Radio. In October 1929, VIX Spiderbeck left the Paul Whiteman Orchestra in New York to return to his hometown of Davenport, Iowa. In the familiar environment, Vix recovered some of his strength. Les Swanson, who played jazz piano in Davenport at the time, met Spiderbeck during the winter of 1929 and 30.
When he came back here in the winter of 1929-30, I remember what a great thrill it was to find he was making a personal appearance with Jimmy Hicks at the Danceland Ballroom in Davenport. Of course, I spent many nights there just listening to his fascinating style of playing, and we forgot all about dancing when he was playing. I was playing piano at that time with the orchestra of Traveler Hearn in Davenport, and I can remember one rehearsal night when O'Hearn made the startling announcement, "Well, boys, Vic Spiderbeck is going to be playing with us at the Hotel Blackhawk next week." This was another thrill of the once-in-a-lifetime category. Vix had been a member of this particular fraternity during his school days, so he enjoyed playing at this dance as much as we did.
And as always, Vix had trouble reading music, even his own.
He reluctantly took several choruses during the evening, and I remember one particular incident that night which was quite amusing. One of our arrangements was on the tune Singin' the Blues, which had been copied from a record on which Frankie Trombar and Vix had taken choruses. Everything sailed along fine until we approached the spot where Vix had taken a chorus. Our trumpet player, Eddie Sidebottom, suddenly grabbed the arrangement and pushed it over in front of Vix, saying, "Here, you play this. It's yours." Vix seemed to be momentarily caught off guard and exclaimed, "I can't play this." So he balked at playing his own chorus. As I recall, somebody else in the brass section filled in the void. After the dance, Vix again reluctantly agreed to do a few piano solos, but as I recall, he didn't want an audience beyond the boys in the band. He wouldn't even sit down at the piano until the last group of dancers had left the hall.
As he always had in the past, Vix enjoyed sitting in with the local bands. Big-time success hadn't gone to his head.
Vic certainly enjoyed getting out and playing with the local boys. He wasn't anything like what we had expected. He just wanted to be one of the local gang when he played here, and there was no air of superiority or aloofness which you might expect from somebody who had been off playing in the big time. I recall he insisted on being paid whatever the other men in the band received. And in those days, in the midst of the terrible Depression era, we were getting $6 a night for a job going to 1 a.m. and $9 if it went to 2 a.m. Vix played several other dates with us, and I got to know him quite well. One of the dates I remember best with him was a hastily scheduled pickup band affair late that winter at the Working Men's Hall in Rock Island, across the river from Davenport. I had received a call about 3 p.m. that afternoon and went on the job without knowing who was to be there. The job had been lined up at the last minute by Jimmy Hicks. I arrived on the scene first about 8:30 p.m. and a few moments later was quite startled to see Vix come trundling up the steps and lugging the drummer's equipment. He explained that he was just filling in on drums as they were unable to obtain anybody else on such short notice. This is believed to be the only official engagement Vix ever did on drums, although he probably might have done some drumming at jazz sessions. He did a pretty good job, nothing fancy, just a good steady beat with tempo like a metronome. Others who appeared on that job were Eston Spurrier on trumpet, Bob Scrooby on trombone, and Eddie Anderson on sax. On the last dance that evening, Bix switched over to piano, and I made my first and last appearance on drums. Everything was played in the key of C, and Bix, of course, was taking courses which were out of this world. I noticed on every piece he had a unique method of winding up his chorus with a spread chord arrangement. As soon as the strains of Home Sweet Home were over, I asked him if he used that spread chord thing in any of his piano compositions. All he said was, not yet. I asked him to show it to me, which he did, and I still use it whenever the mood strikes me. Bix never criticized any of the local musicians. If they played something like he liked, he would give them a pat on the back. I remember that night he said to me, I like the way you play tense. And no further explanation. And he said, why don't you come up to my house some night and we'll compare notes on the piano? So that was the beginning of a friendship which extended through his stay here at that time.
Bix's winter of relaxing included recreation in other areas, too.
We also took in several shows and dances together, and one night he accompanied me to the Moline Fieldhouse across the river to see a boxing card sponsored by the Moline Elks. I was a sports reporter for the Davenport Times at that time, so we had ringside seats. Bix thoroughly enjoyed the boxing card as only a good fight fan would. It was a good boxing card, although none of the fighters ranked among the top notchers at that time. The next week, we took in a couple of movies together. It didn't make much difference what was playing in the various theaters. Bix would always state, let's see something that has some music in it. So on both occasions, we went to a second-rate theater where some old musicals were showing. On another occasion, we went to the Danceland Ballroom and heard Crazy Cats and His Kittens, one of the big-name bands of the day. That was the last time I saw Bix that winter, as he left shortly later to go back east.
With high hopes and a much-needed rest, Bix Beiderbecke returned to New York in April 1930. But the Depression had not left the music business unscathed. Paul Whiteman had reduced the number of men in his orchestra from 30 to 18, and there was no room for an unsteady cornet player. Playing for an occasional college dance was all the work that Bix could find until his old friend Hoagie Carmichael gathered a group to record. On May 21, 1930, Hoagie Carmichael and his orchestra met at the Victor Studios in New York. The group included the Dorsey Brothers and Irving Brodsky on piano, along with the men named by Frank Powers.
A lot of things were happening in the jazz world between the time that Bix had made his 1927 masterpieces and the 1930 date with Hoagie Carmichael. The emergence of what we have come to call Chicago style was complete. By the time Bix's old friend Hoagie invited him into the recording studio to participate in this particular recording date, the group of musicians that Bix was surrounded with were different. This was an interesting date. Bix Beiderbecke and Bubber Miley, the great mute stylist with the Duke Ellington band, the only Negro in the session, an interesting situation. Tommy Dorsey was on trombone. Benny Goodman was on clarinet and played a great chorus. Bud Freeman was along on tenor sax, the great Chicago stylist who was to influence very many musicians. Joe Venuti was present. Eddie Lang on guitar from the old Trombar days. Harry Goodman, Benny's brother, was there, and Gene Krupa was playing drums, driving this band in a four-beat manner that Bix didn't have the advantage of this kind of a rhythm section on his previous recordings. Barnacle Bill the Sailor is a novelty number. It features Hoagie and Carson Robinson, several members of the band, including Joe Venuti, on the vocal. But then the hot choruses, in which the time is doubled and the band swings out, are unique. Goodman has one and Bix has the other. They're outstanding.
The vocal section of Barnacle Bill was done by Carson Robinson and a chorus of band members.
Like a Christmas tree.
Barnacle Bill the Sailor.
I'll sail the seas until I croak. I'll fight and swear and drink and smoke, but I can't swim a bloody stroke.
That's Barnacle Bill the Sailor. Bust in the door. I'll rear and tear and rant and roar. I'll spin your yarns and tell your lies. I'll drink your wine and eat your pies. I'll kiss your cheeks and black your eyes.
Rockin' Chair, a composition of Hoagy's, made the same day as Barnacle Bill the Sailor, features again a trumpet solo by the great Rubber Miley, and near the end of the recording, a beautiful solo by Bix, full of pathos.
Hoagy Carmichael remembers this recording session with Bix and the band.
I wrote one specific part for him in a record that we did for Victor with the big band with all the boys and Rockin' Chair. Yes, on the ending of one of the Rockin' Chair tune that we recorded, I wrote something specifically for Bix to play, and that I believe was the only time I ever out of the two or three records we made that I ever told him anything. That band was a great band. I don't know whether you remember about it or not, but it was a combination of the finest musical names today, like Betty Goodman, the Dorseys, Joe Venuti, Krupa, Benny's brother playing bass. Who else of note besides Bix? I can't tell you them all. Arnold Brillhart. Well, in the records I made at that time for Victor, I used all these big names, including Tea Garden. Who else? I can't name them all. And I had Red Norvo at times, and Jimmy and Tommy Dorsey. Well, on this particular record of Rockin' Chair, I needed a certain type of ending to finish it off so that Joe Venuti could come in and finish the record off with a couple or three little notes of his, and the two little phrases tied in together. Now, it's the only time I ever tried to write anything for Bix. I just say, Bix, go. And so, what else could you say?
Hoagie sings in this recording of his own tune, Rockin' Chair.
Laying by my side, fetch me the gin, son. Boy, tan your hide now. I can't get from this cabin.
You ain't going nowhere.
Nowhere. Just set me here grabbing at the flies round this rocking chair. You remember Aunt Harriet?
How long haven't she been, Pappy?
Send me a sweet chariot. For the end of the troubles I've seen.
You seen them, Pappy. I won't let rotten check get you.
Judgment day, yes, son. I'm chained, chained to my rocking chair.
Bix Beiderbecke found a ray of hope when the Victor Company offered him a recording contract. Bix had assumed that the recordings were to be his piano solos, but when the contract arrived, it called for an orchestral session. The easygoing Beiderbecke reacted by gathering a group of his friends for a September recording date. Talented though the group was, it had not been selected for its musical compatibility. The recordings cut on September 9th found only moderate success. Frank Powers adds his comments on the session.
Within less than a year of his death, Victor Records decided that they would like to promote Bix Beiderbecke as a star and a band leader. They set up a recording date for September 8th, 1930. Bix went into the studio with himself, with Ray Ludwig on second trumpet, who had been with him in the Goldkit band, Tommy Dorsey, and Boyce Cullen on trombones, Benny Goodman and Jimmy Dorsey, Pee Wee Russell and Bud Freeman making up the reed section, Joe Venuti, Irving Brodsky, Eddie Lang, Min Liebrook on string bass, and Gene Krupa again on drums, to cut three sides. The first one we hear is "I'll Be a Friend with Pleasure." Bix again plays a beautiful chorus under the hat, under his derby hat that had become the custom at that time.
Wesley Vaughn did the vocal on "I'll Be a Friend with Pleasure." Russell, who had been one of Bix's sidekicks at Hudson Lake with the Summer Goldcat Troupe, was present for the Victor date.
Well, in my estimation, well, I don't know more hero worship. I won't put it that way. The guy was a fine gentleman, a scholar, in my estimation. I don't know how to put it to you in words. I think, listen to his music. The only thing I feel sorry for you folks for, you couldn't hurt him. Couldn't have hurt him, I should have said, in person, and appreciated his greatness.
For another date, cut by Bix Beiderbecke and his orchestra, Bix abandoned his derby hat mute to take a beautiful chorus.
I don't think there's anyone who is really a fan of Bix's who isn't stirred and moved, not only by "I'll Be a Friend with Pleasure," but also the next one we'll hear, "Deep Down South." Because when Bix was around, it didn't matter how commercial everything else was. This great genius raised the mundane to the sublime. With the exception of one final recording session with Hoagy Carmichael, the discs cut for Victor marked the end of Bix Beiderbecke's recording career. During the summer of 1930, Bix Beiderbecke played third trumpet on a weekly radio show. Other work, even for college dances, was hard to find. Bix continued his slow deterioration, lacking self-confidence, out of work, and broke. This is Bix, a biographical series made possible through a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Consultants for the series were John Steiner, along with Joseph Campbell and Philip Evans. Commentary was recorded by Frank Powers. Continuity was written by Mary K. Fulton. Audio engineer, Michael J. McGuire. Bix was researched, produced and directed by Jim Grover. This is Bill Utter speaking for Miami University Radio.
WMKV 89.3 FM, your home 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for all your favorite music from the 1920s through the 1940s, is proud to present another half-hour program from the historic documentary on one of the greatest legends of jazz, Bix Beiderbecke.